Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, back after the long weekend, and we are continuing with our mailbag. Part three, Alex, what are we getting into today?
Yeah, we got a really interesting mixed bag of questions here. Talking about which player on the roster we want to see take the biggest progression leap this season. If the Knicks could look at Dante Exum as a potential option, which maybe that's a little bit of a loaded question given who asked it, so we'll get into that. Where does Emmanuel Quickley's game go from here with Kemba and Rose on the roster now? And which non-NBA athlete we get most excited to watch and what about of all time? So we'll get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. This is all about back up off the glass. It's good.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks. Today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. I'm Gavin Shaw, a resumed play-by-play broadcaster. I keep hyping up soccer or football, Alex, but I found out I'm getting started with soccer next week. Very, very excited to get back into it. He is, of course, Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the finest Knicks website in the world, The Strickland. And this is Locked On Knicks. I always forget to say this, but I'm remembering in the moment. So please, if you're not already, subscribe on every platform you get podcasts. And please go leave us a 5-star review. I always say this, but you can write mean things about us in the comments as long as you put 5 stars. And it's perfectly cool. Anyways, let's get into it. Part three of the mailbag. And the first question, Alex, is a loaded one. It comes from Webby at @Ross_Webby. And he wants to know, which player on the roster are you looking to see take the biggest progression leap this season? I'm not sure about you, but to me, it jumped out right away that isn't RJ kind of the only tenable answer here, just because Quickley's minutes are going to be pretty limited. Obi's minutes going to be pretty limited. Maybe you can make a case for someone like Evan Fournier having a career year. I think that would be a fascinating argument, or Julius even taking another step forward. But when I look at how I expect the Knicks rotation to go and where their young guys are going to play and when their young guys are going to play, I almost feel like RJ is the only possible answer.
I think there's one that you may have overlooked there, and that would be Mitch.
Oh yeah. I forgot about Mitch. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's probably RJ or Mitch just because of opportunity. So obviously, RJ is going to be starting. You know, it's going to be, I think we can pretty safely say the top four guys, you know, that will be starting will be Kemba, Fournier, RJ, Julius. And that's pretty much locked in. And then the 5 spot, I would like to think that based off how things went earlier last year and everything, that basically the Knicks just paid Nerlens as a high price insurance policy on Mitch, more or less. Along with also paying Taj, you know, the decent amount that they paid him for this year as well. You know, I hope that was just kind of rewarding those guys and being like, all right, you know, we need this backup. You know, Mitch, even if some of them have been freak injuries, he has spent, you know, a decent amount of time injured the last couple of years. So, you know, let's just make sure that everything's square behind him. But hopefully their thought is, and I guess we'll see some of their intentions, you know, based off what comes out about Mitch's extension prior to the season. And if the Knicks offer one, how much they offer, that sort of thing. I think in the next month or so, some of that will start to come into focus a little more, and we'll kind of see where they really stand with him. But as long as, you know, they believe in him as the starter still, which I don't see why they wouldn't, he's definitely, I mean, while rehabbing his foot, it looks like he put a lot of work into his body, you know, as far as building up his, especially it looks like his upper body has gotten a lot bigger, a lot stronger. He says he's up to like 275 pounds now, I think, which I guess we would have to see too. Like, is that going to affect his mobility? Is that going to affect his, you know, his explosiveness or anything like that? Or is he just adding functional muscle to his already very explosive frame. I guess we'll see. You know, hopefully it's also not too much, in the sense that sometimes when big guys put on weight like that, it could put a little undue stress on them. It might worry me a tiny bit, considering Mitch is literally coming off a foot injury as well. But anyway, if everything goes according to plan, I think there is a decent chance that we could see Mitch make one of the bigger progression leaps on the team, which he had kind of already started doing last year and then got derailed twice by injury. But he was starting to really show a lot of discipline, I think. He wasn't fouling like a madman anymore. You know, he seemed content to just stop people from scoring, not so much get the big highlight block anymore, which was kind of like the shortcoming of his first couple seasons, even though, you know, he played so well and those blocks were amazing. He sometimes would gamble for them when he could have just put up a contest, you know, and not gone for the block and created the same result regardless. So hopefully he continues growing like that. Hopefully this added muscle mass is not a detriment to him and instead helps him against some of the biggest and best centers in the league that have kind of occasionally had their way with him previously, like Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, you know, Cat, guys of that nature that are forces on the offensive end and on the boards, that hopefully Mitch will be able to, you know, keep them in check even more now than he did previously. And yeah, but otherwise, I mean, I'll let you lay out the case for RJ. I still think even with that, that's kind of just a devil's advocate thing. I think RJ definitely has the chance for the biggest leap, and we already got to kind of see some of the things he was working on during the Olympic qualifiers with like step back threes and pull ups and stuff like that. I mean, if he really starts working that into his game, and if he has some improvement to his handle, we could be talking about, you know, potentially a jump from promising youngster to all-star this year if he makes those sort of moves.
Yeah, you almost are making me come around on Mitch. I don't know why I completely blanked on him, but I genuinely think there's a chance that he gets close to 18 points per game this year, maybe 20 points per game. And I mean, it's the argument I've been making his whole career. If you give him a high-level point guard, which he now has in Kemba Walker, you give him four shooters around him, which he's going to have in that starting lineup. I mean, I think the dude is just going to feast on dunks, and he's going to be hyper, hyper efficient. He might challenge his own field goal percentage record. And I think he's going to be a common outlet for all four of these guys. So there's certainly an argument statistically Mitch will be the guy, but I think I would more so bet on RJ making the most meaningful strides in terms of his actual skill level, just because there's almost more room to grow. Mitch is kind of inherently a little bit more of a limited player. Obviously, if we saw him busting out jab steps and two dribble moves this year, maybe that would change my mind on that. But I think RJ, there's an avenue for him making an all-star team this year, and that sounds strong. But if the shooting is for real, and that would be part of the question for me, because we did see Seth Partnow made this point on the Strickland podcast, if I'm remembering correctly. There were shooting jumps throughout the league last year with no fans that dissipated a little bit in the playoffs. So is RJ, I don't think he's a 45% three-point shooter, especially if his diet of attempts gets a little bit more difficult, right? If there's a little bit more off-the-dribble stuff in there. But if he's a 38% three-point shooter while taking three a game off the dribble, maybe one or two a game with someone right in his face, then you're talking about someone, if he can continue to get better around the bucket, which I think Drew Hanlon has mentioned is probably the focus of his offseason, and just the sheer lack of pressure on him at this point. I mean, having Evan Fournier, having Kemba Walker, having Julius Randle, the floor is going to be spaced. RJ will, I mean, I guess just by size, there's a chance that he still sees a strong perimeter defender, but probably there are going to be a lot of nights where he's seeing the third best perimeter defender, and Fournier and Randle are getting the top two. I just think this is his chance to become sort of the ultra efficient 20 point per game, five assists player that we've been looking for. And I'm extremely curious about how his passing takes a step forward, because I think he's going to get a little bit less time directly on the ball just because the Knicks have so many more mouths to feed. But I think he has a chance to be more effective when he does have the ball, again, because of all those outlets. So I think all of that adds up to RJ having a breakout. If he doesn't have a breakout in a big way this year, and look, obviously he made massive, massive improvements last year, so I don't want to over-exaggerate things, but that's when it would be time to put more of a ceiling on RJ, where if you see that steady progression again this season, then you can sort of say the sky is the limit. But ultimately, Alex, part of RJ's success will be not sweating it too much and just staying calm. Is there anything you can recommend to help him along that path?
Well, let me tell you, if RJ finds that he is sweating things a little too much, he should probably try out Sweat Block. And I personally just tried it over the weekend, had a wedding to go to. And I'll tell you what, if I could have covered my entire body in Sweat Block wipes, I would have, because it was at an outdoor venue with an unair-conditioned reception space that only had fans, that was open air, but it was 100 degrees where the wedding was happening on Friday. It was pretty brutal. I did sweat, but I'll tell you what, I did not really sweat from my armpits, because I put Sweat Block on in anticipation of the day. And it actually saved my shirt pretty well. My shirt looked pretty good. Did not have that like see-through look to it. I didn't look like I had just been in a wet t-shirt contest. So I owe Sweat Block quite a bit for how I'm going to ultimately look in all these pictures, despite having a lot of sweat on my brow and on my head. Sweat Block wipes are doctor created and doctor recommended. They work for up to 7 days per use, and they come with the dry shirt guarantee. If Sweat Block doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back. Like I said, I was in 100 degree heat and had Sweat Block on my pits, and my pits did not sweat. So I can definitely attest it. It was pretty staggering. They've been the best seller on Amazon for the past 10 years with over 13,000 reviews, and Sweat Block is manufactured in the USA. Most importantly, if you use Sweat Block, you can wear what you want to wear, and it could be your little secret to confidence. It should really be in everyone's toiletry bag. If you got a big presentation, a hot date, or like me, you have to be in your friend's wedding. I was in the wedding party, so I had to look good all day and not sweat through my suit as well as my shirt. You could definitely use some Sweat Block wipes. So if you want to get some for yourself, get them today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON, or at Amazon and CVS.
You know, Alex, general managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? Certainly true about the guy we just talked about, RJ Barrett. But when you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to help make sure you find candidates with the skills that you need. When hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple. Just attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all of your hiring in one place, even interviewing. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. With Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with the skills you need. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions do apply. All right, Alex, we got another really good question from another Alex, Alex with a smiley face at anxious_and_one on Twitter, and he wants to know, where does IQ's game go from here? Does he grow or flounder with Kemba and Rose? I'll leave that to you, Alex. A fascinating question coming off of what was overall a very successful summer league for Emmanuel Quickley.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting to think about now, too, because clearly the Knicks had him taking point guard reps. And so, you know, typically you would think, oh, if they're doing this in summer league, this must be something that they're trying to get him comfortable with before the season. And, but, you know, as Alex mentions here with Kemba and Rose on the team and in place, and you figure, I mean, they're going to definitely, in an ideal world, they would soak up all 48 minutes at the point guard spot. Now, maybe the reason that they were grooming Quickley as more of a point guard is that, you know, maybe they are planning rest nights for Kemba and Rose. And, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, I guess maybe there's a world where Quickley becomes like the backup point guard in that scenario. So hopefully that is the case. I don't know, though. I mean, it's the thing with IQ, too, is that I thought that he played great as sort of a combo guard last year as well. You know, I think he defends well enough that he can credibly cover ones or twos when he's out there. So, like, we saw lineups with him and Derrick Rose. I mean, that second unit defensively sometimes was, like, almost better than the starters thanks to the personnel because, you know, they would have Taj in the middle who just kind of walled off the paint. Then you would have Rose and Quickly playing the passing lanes really aggressively up top and, you know, hounding guys up there. And Obi was playing really well on defense. So, I mean, I think he can continue just kind of being a two guard, you know, as a combo. But again, even with that, it's kind of hard to find minutes because ideally Fournier is not going to have the sort of load management restrictions that Kemba and Rose might have. And so he's probably going to play like 35 minutes a game unless he gets hurt, which his career is a little bit of a mixed bag as far as whether he's been injured or not. Some years he plays pretty much the full slate. Other years, you know, he ends up taking about 15, 20 games. I don't know. I guess all that is to say, you know, this is kind of a lame duck answer, but there is no way to know for sure until we see him come out in preseason a little bit. And really more so the first game of the regular season and going on from there, you know, to see like what the Knicks' ideal role is for him, because it's, I really don't know, you know, it's so confusing based off how he was played last year, the moves they made this offseason, you know, how he played in summer league. It's just, there's a lot of different variables at play. I think if I was going to guess, I would say, you know, as far as does he grow or flounder with Kemba and Rose, I don't think he's going to flounder. I don't think he's going to get worse. Let's put it that way. I think there is a chance that he maybe doesn't get enough playing time to grow his game as much as we might want. But I also think that this organization loves Quickly and is really, like, clearly based off how they treated him in summer league and how they treat Obi, you know, they do want to give them some chances and they do want to see them grow and turn into better players. So I would be willing to bet that they'll find some way to find him minutes. Now, if I guess it just depends on if quote unquote find him minutes means find him 12 minutes or find him 20 to 25 minutes somehow. And, you know, I think at least at first with no injuries and everything on the roster, it might be closer to like 12 minutes, which will be disappointing to fans, but I don't ultimately know if it's going to like hurt Quickly's development. I don't think that he loses stuff like that because he's just such a hard worker and you know that behind the scenes he's putting in all the work. So he pretty much is that type of player that's always ready to go the second his number is called. So I don't know. I guess I think that there's a chance that it could hamper him from a minutes perspective, but I don't really see his development being like stymied by the presence of those two, but I don't know how you feel about that.
I think to your point, the only way it's stymied is in its lack of growth. Like I just, because the next step for him logically would be a role more similar to what we saw in summer league, which interestingly enough, he got to do that a bit at the beginning of last year. And then after the Knicks acquired Derrick Rose, we mostly saw him off the ball. And that's where I'd want to see him running NBA offense against opposing starters and seeing Kenny hold up on both ends of the floor. And barring two injuries, I think, to Derrick Rose and Kemba Walker, we're not going to get to see that this year. And look, there probably will be games where both Kemba and Rose miss, but it's unlikely we're going to have, or maybe I'm destroying the Knicks' chances here. I would say it probably, hopefully, won't be a common occurrence that they're both out. But I think where we will see growth is in those moments where one of the two of them is missing. And we're going to see Quickly on the court, I think, in those scenarios for close to 30 minutes a game, because Tibbs showed he's pretty comfortable playing Quickly with another guard. I'm curious if he, like, how many minutes we get of Kemba and Quickly together, just because defensively that feels like you're asking Quickly to do a lot by defending a bigger two, while Rose is sort of sturdy enough that he could guard a shooting guard where Kemba couldn't. But in those minutes, I want to see Quickly take charge a little bit more and have a bit more possessions and stretches where he pushes D. Rose off the ball. And maybe, again, maybe that's a long shot given what D Rose did for this team last year, what D Rose meant, and just how much more experienced D Rose is. And like nominally, he's still your better option at point guard. But we saw some of the passes that Quickly was able to make in summer league, and he was showing that, I don't know, he can run a relatively well-oiled machine offensively. And just starting your possession with the ball in his hands, I think you can look at it one of two ways, right? You could say that that's the ultimate way to leverage his skill set, because you're immediately stretching a defense to its greatest extent, right? He's approaching Steph Curry territory of you literally do have to pretty much pick him up at half court. Or you could argue that putting him off the ball, and then you're just leaving D Rose basically with a 4-on-4 because Quickly's guy has to hover 30 feet away. That could be the best way to leverage him. But for Quickly's growth, I just want to see more times where he's the dude bringing the ball up the court, initiating offense, and then offensively just continuing to be fearless and continuing even in limited minutes. And it's hard to do this because you're not in a great rhythm, but to come off the bench and fire with impunity right as he gets into the game, right as he gets going. I think we're going to see something very similar to his rookie year, where he has some of those iconic, massive performances, like dropping 30 against Dame and going toe-to-toe with him. It's just going to have to be on very select nights, because there aren't going to be a lot of games, to your point, Alex, where he's playing over 15 minutes, almost regardless of how good he is. At least that's what I think. There is a world where D. Rose takes a step back or suffers a big injury, and all of a sudden Quickly sort of thrust into the spotlight. And the good news for the Knicks is it feels like he is most certainly ready for that. But Alex, that's how the Knicks can repair their point guard situation. This is, again, a stretch. How can people go about repairing their car these days?
Yeah, we're crushing it with the transitions to the ads today. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto, who can help you repair your car if you've got something going on. Let's say that you hear the little noise in your car and you know, you're able to identify what's wrong yourself, or maybe it's just a cosmetic improvement, whatever you're doing, and you want to repair your car. You cannot look me in the face and look me in the face over this podcast and tell me that the worst part of fixing your car is not having to go to that brick and mortar auto parts store, deal with the customer service people there that just kind of seem interested in making a buck for themselves, don't really seem all that interested in helping you find a good deal or get the parts you need for, you know, anything less than the maximum that they can charge you. Then on top of it, they don't even ship to your house. They make you come back to their store to pick them up because they don't have them in stock there. Because how could they? It's a tiny little store. There's like a million different auto parts. And then you go back and you finally grab it and you come home and you go to do the job yourself. And it's now like 5 days after you initially wanted to do it. And you're so far into it financially that it's like, oh man, maybe I should have just made an appointment at the mechanic instead of trying to do it myself. That's where rockauto.com comes in. You've been doing it wrong this whole time if you've been going to these stores. Rockauto.com's been in business for over 20 years. They've been helping customers as a family business, really making sure to, you know, get people exactly the parts that they need and take care of you as a customer, all for the lowest possible price. They're not going to charge you more than they're going to charge a mechanic or anything else. You know, they give everybody the same bottom dollar prices. They ship it right to your house. And it's honestly a really great experience compared to going to one of those chain auto parts stores. For example, you could save basically almost half off of a fuel pump for your Honda Odyssey if you're fixing the family minivan. $353 from that chain store, $216 from Rock Auto. You're not going to get much better of a deal than that. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And if you decide to get something, right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, and we're back for our third and final segment of this mailbag. And this next question comes, I'm going to try on this last name. I think I can do it. Mark Tatulishwili. I'm not sure if I got that. But at @ch13f__ on Twitter, have we got any space left to bring in Dante Exum with a flag of Australia emoji? Gavin, if I'm not mistaken, Mark is from Australia, yeah?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get wanting to bring Exum in. I have always been a fan of Dante Exum's game. I think especially what he's grown into and like what we saw in playing for the Australian national team. I think he would probably be a pretty good investment for any team at this point. That said, we're literally just talking about how there's so few minutes for the Knicks to even try to develop their own, you know, young prospect who, I mean, as much as I like Exum's game, there's obviously a lot more upside in there with Quickly as far as, you know, his the upside of age, you know, plus skill set, plus everything else. I think that that's a guy that I would way more like giving time to. And I would think that Exum would probably want to find a situation where he could actually find some playing time. The Knicks just aren't that right now. If we're talking about guys that are super long players with probably some untapped potential that the Knicks could potentially bring in for around a minimum contract, I think I'd probably rather just go with Frank Ntilikina. As cool as it would be to get someone from that Aussie team who I really enjoyed watching during the Olympics, I just don't see Exum as an actual option.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I think that's fair.
All right. Well, we're going to move to our next question. And this comes from Joe Yoke at Joey Landolfa, who used to be a regular on our green rooms, too. So shout out to Joe. What non-NBA athlete do you get most excited to watch currently? And what about of all time? I'll throw that to you, Gavin. Who's your favorite athlete not in basketball to watch?
Wow, that's a good question. I think it's very much colored by my fandom and like what teams I love. So I'm a big Oklahoma football fan. So currently big Spencer Rattler, or Marvin Mims guy, one of the best young receivers in college football. Also Baker Mayfield carrying over from that. I'm trying to think because the main sport I watch outside of basketball is pro football. I feel like I am pretty into like all the tight ends. Like I like George Kittle. I'm a big Travis Kelce guy. Tyreek Hill, character stuff aside, is a pretty thrilling guy. I'm trying to think. Like usually there's one running back that I'm always like really into. Like I think Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey might be the two right now. Just kind of like explosive, like really shifty dudes. Is there anyone for you? Are you more of an NFL guy, MLB? Like who's the one other guy for you?
Yeah, I think the thing with the I find football to be a more visually appealing sport than like baseball. So even though I have some baseball players like Mets, like I would say the Mets are probably my second favorite team, like in all of sports after the Knicks. But I think football is my second favorite sport after the NBA, if that makes sense. Just because like I find that, you know, the NFL and, you know, I mean, there's all the stuff about, you know, just how safe is football and everything else. And of course that is a concern. So, you know, the hits, you know, sometimes make you cringe a little more now than they used to. Now that, you know, we know everything that we know about head injuries and stuff like that. But I generally find football to be more visually appealing. So, you know, even though I love watching like say Pete Alonso, for example, on the Mets, which I'm more of like just a Mets fan than like a baseball fan in general. Like I really like watching the Mets and I love them, but I just can't bring myself to keep up with baseball at large anymore with like all the statistics and everything else. So like I say, Pete Alonso, Jacob DeGrom, you know, I love watching him pitch. But I would say as far as like in football, favorite athletes, which would probably be the ones that come in as my next, you know, favorite to watch, I would say probably like, I mean, it's probably cliche, but like Mahomes is amazing to watch. I freaking love watching him play football. Like just the way that he picks apart a defense is insane. The touch that he puts on passes is crazy. I've always been a big wide receiver guy too, though. So I don't know if I have like a favorite currently in the NFL as far as receivers go, but some of my all-time favorites, like Brandon Marshall, I always thought was amazing to watch. Like he was just, I always thought if you put Brandon Marshall with a better quarterback than he had throughout his career, like he had like Jay Cutler, Ryan Fitzpatrick, like back with Denver. I mean, he put up just insane numbers with Denver with like Jake Plummer throwing him the ball. Like I always thought if you put him with like Manning or Brady or someone like that in their prime, he could have potentially broken Randy Moss's record that he set with the Patriots, like for most yards, most touchdowns, all that stuff. He definitely could have set new marks for all those because he was in his prime. He was such a perfect route runner. you know, a vertical threat. I mean, he could do literally everything. I think also, speaking of Randy Moss, I always loved watching Randy Moss play. Jamal Charles as a running back, always one of my favorites. I love running backs that, you know, they're not just a pass catching back and not just a, you know, a good back from under center, you know, and from, you know, like I formation or whatever, that they can kind of do a little bit of everything. And like Jamal Charles, I always thought was that guy. Like when he was healthy, he could literally, there was no way he could stop him on the field.
College Reggie Bush, a good example of that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was actually going to say my favorite player of all time, my football fandom was actually defined by a single player for like the first part of my life. I was a huge Rams fan because Marshall Faulk was like the first player that ever got me into football, because watching him was just like mesmerizing, the way that he would break down a defense. Like, and you know, the years when he was setting the touchdown records and all that stuff. LaDainian Tomlinson too was another guy like that. He was insane to watch. I loved watching LT when he was in his prime. That was really like early to mid 2000s was really like the golden age of running backs in the NFL. I loved watching running backs play back then. But yeah, I was actually like, my football team for a long time was the Rams. And then once they moved to LA, a large part of why I stuck with them was that my dad, when I was in my early teenage years, moved to St. Louis for work because my parents are split. And so like he moved to St. Louis, he's been there ever since. And so that sort of justified me like liking the Rams. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, now I have a team out where my dad is. And then once they moved to LA, I didn't like how their owner basically like burned the city of St. Louis to the ground as far as, you know, being a sports town. And, you know, basically never gave the city a chance to keep the team, you know, basically went out of his way to say that the fans were terrible and, you know, never filled the arena. And it's like, well, you've been putting out like 2-14 teams for the last like 6 years. Do you expect it to sell out? Like, what are you doing here? At any rate. Yeah. So then I switched over to the Jets, which I'd always kind of like halfway rooted for the Jets anyway, because my mom's a huge Jets fan and whatever. So I just kind of fully made that transition over and started rooting for the Jets full time after the Rams went to LA, because I can't root for LA teams. Anyway, that's a really long winded spiel there. But yeah, those are some of my favorites for sure. I'm not like, I wish I was more of like a soccer/football fan, but you know, I'm not really. I have seen some clips of, you know, like Messi, Ronaldo, those guys. And there's some legitimately insane things that they can do with a soccer ball. So I always try to appreciate that as well. And then like even hockey, I don't know. I mean, hockey, I sort of like baseball. Like I kind of like the complete product more than the individual performances, I guess. Like I don't have as much like appreciation for the intricacies of the game. So I don't really have anybody that stands out to me there. But yeah, that's probably my favorites. If I was just going completely off the top of my head, I'll probably think of someone like 10 minutes after this and be like, oh crap, how did I forget to bring up so-and-so? But those are definitely my favorites.
Yeah, it's weird. I think that's sort of the beauty of basketball. I mean, and again, I think people who are football nerds or baseball nerds or soccer, I would say is pretty comparable to basketball in this. But I do feel like basketball is the easiest sport to appreciate individual greatness because you don't have the helmets. You only have 10 guys on the court. It's pretty obvious to everyone, like, when someone is amazing. Like you could bring someone who's never watched a basketball game before to a game and they would just immediately be able to say, oh, that LeBron guy, he's like the best to ever do this, right? And you'd be like, yeah, he is. So I think that's sort of the beauty of it and why people have such like specific tastes about individual players in basketball. And obviously there, again, if you really know the sport, you can do the same thing in football and baseball, but I feel like basketball, it's the most transmissible. So maybe that's why, at least for me, I don't have as many individual guys in other sports.
Yeah. I also think with like football and basketball, like other than the helmet thing with football, which has always made it difficult for football to really market their stars in many ways. But like, other than like the biggest guys, like the Mannings and the Bradys and, you know, all that. But, you know, it's always been difficult to market football because of the helmet thing. But as far as just on the field stuff, on the field, on the court, whatever, I think basketball and football stand out as far as like destination sports for watching individual performances, because they feature the most acts of just like pure, like unfiltered athleticism and just like that's just like sport right there. You know what I mean? Like soccer is all about like precision and endurance and whatever. And there's definitely something to all that. And they do some beautiful things with the ball, you know, the dribble moves, the bending it while they're kicking it, like just all this other stuff that is really fantastic. But you don't see a soccer player like leaping over another player while doing something else in the air, like you see like in the NBA or in the NFL, where like you literally see in the NFL once a week, you'll see someone hurdle somebody, like a 5'9" guy will hurdle someone who's 6 feet tall and score a touchdown, you know, while flying 10 feet through the air. I mean, you don't see that in other sports other than the NFL, other than the NBA, where you see, you know, someone get posterized pretty much every night, you know. And the impressive part about the NBA too is that they perform those feats of athleticism like 82 times in, you know, 6 months roughly, you know, plus playoffs too. So, you know, there's something to be said for the endurance of NBA players as well, I think. But yeah, that's why I tend to gravitate to those two sports as far as like individual guys that I end up looking for. But anyway, I think that's probably a good note to wrap up on here. Do you have anything else to add? Any other athletes that came to your mind before we sign off, Gavin?
Quick shout out to CeeDee Lamb on the Cowboys. He's going to be amazing this year. Everyone go draft him in fantasy and don't be like me and draft J.K. Dobbins 20 minutes after he tore his ACL. But anyways, on that happy note, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We will be back tomorrow with one final mailbag question. We didn't forget about you, DP. He put in a great one asking us about our minutes distribution or our projected minutes distribution for everyone on the roster. I responded that could probably be a full episode. So we are going to make it a full episode that will be in your feeds tomorrow. But until then, he's Alex. I'm Gavin. Peace out.